of episode 14 of the Small Truck Campers podcast. Thanks so much for joining me. Welcome to the episode. We got an awesome episode lined up for you guys. So why don't you grab your favorite campfire beverage and let's hit the road. Thanks so much for joining me. Hope you guys are having a good week out there, getting to enjoy your campers or getting ready for a trip. Or maybe you're just getting into campering right now and you don't have a rig yet, but you're starting to look for them. We are here to help you. This podcast is here to educate, to enlighten, to hopefully share some new information about what's happening out there in the camper world, to give some insight, some behind-the-scenes looks at some manufacturers, and also just to tell some stories about what's going on between the owners of these campers. There's a lot of cool stories behind each owner, and I hope to highlight some of those stories and share those with you guys, keep the inspiration going, and they're just cool to hear. I mean, there's so many cool people in this community. Everyone's got a really cool story, and I'd like to share as many of those stories as we can. But yeah, welcome, episode 14. This should be a fun one. Excited to get you guys listening to this one. And it's so funny. I was driving yesterday, and it's just so cool. The community is obviously, it's on the internet, and it's through Instagram and through Facebook and through YouTube and all that. But it's so cool when you just see somebody kind of local, you know, into the small truck camper thing. I was driving, doing some errands, and I'm coming around the corner, kind of near my house, and out of the corner of my eye, I see a Chevy 1500 with a Sunraider on the back that this guy like had affixed to the back. And I was like, whoa, no way, that's incredible. So I'm on a windy road where there's no real turnoffs. Eventually, I get to do a U-turn, and I'm like hoping this guy's still there. I just wanted to talk to him and just take some photos of this rig and turn around, and a few minutes later, pull up, and sure enough, he's still there. And I'm like, yo, is this your rig? Like, this thing's incredible. And we get to talking, and turns out he's had, you know, two or three Chinooks and Sunraiders, and he had paired this fiberglass Sunraider shell to the Chevy, like, perfectly with a pass-through, and it was just so cool to see. And we got to talking, and he actually lives about a mile or two away from me, and he's like, yeah, man, if you want to come over and check out, I got some other cool rigs if you want to check them out. And I was just thrilled, so we went over to his spot, and you know, lo and behold, there was a 4x4 Chinook in his driveway, a first-gen 4Runner, and then he was showing me pictures. He's got another Chinook up the road at a friend's house and an old Dodge Tradesman camper van, and he was probably in his early 50s, off Instagram, off Facebook, off all the socials, and he just was kind of a word-of-mouth guy, and, you know, it's just so cool to meet people that are like that, so down-to-earth, that have just been into this for so long and that aren't... that are just kind of humble about it, and it's just kind of what they're into. And it's so cool to meet these people and share that passion. And it kind of keeps the fire alive because it's so genuine. And I just hope that if you're out there and you see somebody cool and you know, you get to do a U-turn and chat about the rig, that you guys can share that passion, because it's something super special. And I was stoked to kind of share that with him about what we got going on. And I invited him to check out the Instagram and Facebook when he made an Instagram and Facebook. And he was all stoked that there's other people out there that were into it. And he's like, I can't believe you, you know, you know what's up. That's so cool. I didn't think, you know, a lot of people would understand this rig, but it was really cool. It was a cool experience. So I wanted to start this episode off with that story. There's a lot of cool stories in this episode, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. Before we get into it, though, I do want to take a quick second. We've had the generosity of two brands reach out to us and support the podcast and pretty much support the community. So I want to give them a quick shout out. First supporter has been Guayaki Yerba Mate. These guys have been a supporter of a couple things I've been into in the past few years, and I love their products. It's so good. If you haven't had it yet, you need to go to the local gas station or grocery store and grab yourself a can. It's great for those long drives or those early mornings or those late night projects finishing up before an adventure. And essentially, you know, I like to view it as a less ingredient energy drink than what's conventionally out there, like Monster or Rockstar. And this stuff just gets me so hyped up. They sell it. It's essentially a tea-based energy drink based on yerba mate, which is a tea found in South America, and they brew it up. They've been doing it for a while now. They brew it up and offer it in different cans, different flavors, flat, sparkling, sweetened, unsweetened, and it's super good stuff. So if you got a big project coming up, you got a long road trip coming up, or you got a late night coming up, I highly suggest you grab a can of yerba mate from Guayaki. If you haven't already heard of the company or you haven't had it yet, I think you'll really enjoy it. And if you already know about it, well, keep it going, because that stuff's great. It keeps me going, that's for sure. And secondly, I do want to thank a product out there called The Grail. This is a company that reached out, and they make these awesome on-the-go portable water purifiers. And the best way to describe it is it's sort of like an AeroPress, but for purifying water. AeroPresses are used to make coffee, but it's kind of the same concept. You get, essentially, it's like a cup you fill with water, and you put a slightly smaller cup in that cup, and as you press it down, the water is forced through a filter to purify that water. So you can have clean water anywhere on the go. And I think this is a great idea just to keep in the camper. You know, if you don't have your tanks topped up with water, you run out and you just want some purified water, you can go to any creek or stream and lo and behold, you have some good drinking water. So I'll do a little video about that stuff soon. It's a cool product and how it works and everything. And I just can't thank them enough for the support of the podcast and ultimately the Instagram and the YouTube and everything and ultimately the community. So shout out to those guys. Thanks so much, Waiaki, Yerba Mate, and The Grail. I'll link to those guys' Instagram pages or the social media pages below here in the description. But thanks to you guys. Appreciate it. Let's see. I got a baby strapped to my chest again, trying to get through this podcast. I was waiting for another perfect time to do it when the nap would be on, and it just didn't happen. So I thought, you know what? We're just going to do it now. You just got to get it done. You know, just got to do it. So we got a little 2-month-old baby strapped to our chest as we're recording this, and can't wait to take him out camping one day. So yeah, this episode 14. Thanks so much for joining me. Can't believe we're already at episode 14. That's so cool. It's been an awesome journey, and the amount of people I've gotten to meet and talk to so far has been great, and I can't wait to just keep these conversations going, honestly. Like I said earlier, there's so many cool stories out there. There's so many cool companies and, you know, so many like-minded people that we can all connect to, and through this podcast, I think we can really share some of those stories. And a few months ago, I was down at Steamer Lane, the local surf spot for the Coldwater Classic, sponsored by Four Wheel Campers, and I just wanted to go down there and chat to those guys I've been meeting to for a while now. They're kind of in our quote-unquote backyard, being a few hours away. Their headquarters is a few hours away, that is. And we got to talking, and recently I hit them up and asked if I could come out and do a little video of their facility, their factory, and then sit down with one of their employees and just talk shop about four-wheel campers and the camping industry in general. And they reached back and said they would love to have me out there. So about a week ago, I loaded up the car and headed out to Sacramento, out to Woodland, and got to sit down with Stan of Four Wheel Campers and just pick his brain. If you guys have been active on the forums or the Facebook groups, whether it's Four Wheel Camper Owners, Four Wheel Campers for Sale, or even, like, I think Wander the West or some older forums too, Stan has been a flag in the ground throughout all those different eras of camper boom, camper bust, and is just so knowledgeable. He's been in the camper industry since the early 2000s. He's got a ton of knowledge about different companies, what happened to them, and, you know, where the future is going, what he thinks is working right now. And he's been at Four Wheel Campers since the early 2000s. And he answered a lot of my questions I had. I was confused, you know, about how Six-Pack, what happened to Six-Pack and a couple other companies, and we discussed all that. So this episode is great. I got to drive out there, do my first in-person podcast, which I'd never done before, which was a whole new experience. And it went really well, and it was awesome just to sit down with Stan and have a chat with him about just campers, just talking shop. It was a really good, really good time. And did an awesome walk around tour of their facility. It's an amazing facility out there, out in Woodland, California. The staff is just so nice and welcoming. And you know, the corporate staff and also the workers on the floor there, man, they're all smiling and just making these amazing campers. I got to see them turn essentially raw aluminum into, you know, a four-wheel camper, and just to see the whole process was really special. And they had a few goose eggs there too, or I'm sorry, Easter eggs. They had the Bound for Nowhere rig was there getting ready to get shipped off to South America. I got to look at that thing, and it just looks like amazing in real life. They had a couple other rigs getting worked on, and I was able just to check them out and just really, really see how they're built and the manufacturing process behind them and the craftsmanship and the quality. So stay tuned. That video should be out soonish. Working with my editor to get that completed. So after that factory tour, yeah, I got to sit down, and I want to welcome our guest, and I hope you guys enjoy my conversation with Stan Kennedy from Four Wheel Campers. So yeah, like that, we're recording. So I'm sitting down here in Woodland, California. I got Stan Kennedy, one of the OGs in the camper space, with me. Super happy to have him here, making some time, answer some questions, and we can hear a little bit more about him. If you guys don't know, Stan has been an anchor in the camping space and the outdoor space on different forums. I've seen posts from him from years ago. He's been around through all the changes with different companies and mergers of different companies. We're going to get into some of that stuff because I got some questions about the history of certain companies. But without any further ado, let's welcome Stan Kennedy to the Small Truck Campers podcast. Stan, cool. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And it's been a goal to make it up here, even though it's only a few hours away. I'm happy that it worked out and you were free and I was free and we were able to make this happen.
Santa Cruz is such a nice area. Like we've been going there since we were kids and it's a great place for truck campers.
It really is. Yeah. I was talking to Eric just now about how, to me, it kind of encapsulates like the beach culture of Southern California, but like the scenery of Oregon and Northern California, the Pacific Northwest. And there's so many like nooks and crannies you can kind of get into, whether it's through surfing or just up in the mountains with a truck camper. It's like kind of the perfect vehicle to experience, you know, go down to the parking lot, post up for the day, get some waves and go camping. It's awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
Did you grow up in this area or where did you grow up?
Northern California, like when I was young, out in like Sebastopol, Santa Rosa area, and then moved to Davis. Went to high school there and a little bit of college, and then worked different careers and different jobs before I started here. But I've been at Four Wheel Campers for about 22 years now.
All right, so a veteran, and you've seen a lot of changes.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah, not only with Four Wheel Campers, but with the industry as a whole, mm-hmm. which we'll get into. I'm excited to get into that with you. So you grew up in Sebastopol, which is a beautiful area close to like Bodega Bay. You got kind of the gateway to the northern coast area.
Yep.
And it's definitely blown up in recent times too in terms of just gentrification out there.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful. We like going out there, going camping out there. It's another great spot to go camping. So moving out to Davis, when you were in high school?
Yeah, junior high.
Junior high?
But yeah.
Okay. And what kind of got you involved in the outdoors? Were you into camping at the time or not so much?
Yeah, since like with my parents and sister, we would be camping all the time in the summers, not so much in the winter, but summertime camping as kids. Back in the 70s, like station wagon stuff. And then I did a lot of Boy Scouts when I was young and we'd do Boy Scout trips and it was always tent camping and outdoor camping. And then teens and early college days, a lot of hiking and backpacking up in the Sierras.
Yeah, totally. Davis is right there. It's kind of so close to so many good spots, Tahoe, Yosemite and the Sierra Nevadas and tons of exploration opportunities up there. That's really cool. We got to take advantage of that growing up.
Yeah, and then as soon as we could drive in high school, we were all piling in whoever's car ran the best, and we'd gather gas money and head to the beach every day. Like, so we would get out to Stinson Beach and Half Moon Bay and Pacifica and all those places at least once a week in high school.
Really?
So, and Santa Cruz on occasion, but that was a bit farther.
Yeah. Was that just to get down to the beach or for surfing or just
to surf?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sweet. I never really learned how to do it, but we just like to go because we could get out of school and go have fun.
Yeah. What was that commute like down to like Pacifica?
Pacifica, not bad at all. That's the closest place. It's like an hour and 20 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. Not bad at all.
Wow. Yeah. That's super cool. And then obviously you have San Francisco there. So a lot of stuff going down there. Yeah. Just a cool city as well to visit.
Fun.
Yeah. Super fun. Did you go to UC Davis?
I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, my wife graduated from there. And
nice.
Melanie here that works here graduated from there. But no, I've been in that town and I'm still there, but didn't get the chance to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That's awesome. And Davis, like on another really cool town, college town, lots of good like restaurants and food and stuff. And also, like we just mentioned a gateway, but there's so many, I saw your pontoon boat out in the warehouse there. So obviously lots of good lakes around here, good fishing.
Yeah.
Good hunting, if you're into that. So
we work a lot, and a lot of our camping trips and adventures with truck campers are unfortunately work based, but that it gives us an escape to do the rallies and the events and the campouts and the Overland Expos. So like once a month we're going somewhere in a camper and doing different things in different places all over the West.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, it's one of those things where your work, you know, you're living the life through your job. So you might not have the same like relaxation opportunity as like if I were to go on a vacation to go camping. But at the end of the year, you can look back and be like, you know, we did so many events that a lot of people will get to maybe do one of those events a year. You've probably got to do multiple events over the years kind of tally marks in your own personal, like, camping checkbook, you know?
It is.
So
it's, we've been to some amazing places with it. I've never would have gone to on my own.
Yeah. That's awesome. What's somewhere you've been that you don't think you would have gone to on your own that you got to go?
Just like you, I mean, somewhat unique places. We've done two dealer summer outings where we would get six or seven of our dealers from all over the country. And Denny from our dealership, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, took all of us out. We all had trucks, we all had campers, and we spent, it was about 6 days, five nights one summer, and 5 days, four nights the next summer, all through Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, and like no pavement other than occasional road to get to the next dirt road kind of thing. It was great.
That's super cool.
So all remote, just all off the grid, no cell phone, just remote spots, just park in a field and pitch it up.
Dang. Yeah. Yeah,
it was good.
That's really cool. That's awesome. And what's even better is you have all those connections now, you know, through your work in the industry. So when you go to these places, you link up with these people and they know like the good spots, you know, they know how to get to the good stuff. You're not sitting there like Googling like best camping in Montana, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a huge perk of this whole industry is the sharing of those tips and those tricks and that knowledge and the kind of unwritten network you have, you know?
Yeah.
That's super cool. What's your current setup right now for camper?
Personally don't have one. Okay. I've had three of my own over the years at a Granby. When I first started here in 2002, picked up, used Granby for my F-150, had that for a few years, picked up a newer used F-150 with a Hawk on it. Had that for a little while, sold that, moved over into a six pack camper on a long bed F-150. Ran that for a few years. And then since then I got two kids in college and busy at work. So fun weekend camping. And I can't take a month off and like go to Alaska and take a summer off and drive around the country like at this point in my life. So I have an older Tundra and
nice.
We have five, demo rigs. So like four Tundra, Tacoma, we're picking up a GMC, we're picking up a Tremor. So anytime I need a truck or a camper, I just grab a set of keys and go.
Yeah. I mean, that's
that's the benefit. I don't have to own it.
Yeah.
I don't have to store it. And I can use one anytime. Yeah.
That's the dream right there. Yeah. You know, you have access to four or five completely dialed out, maintenanced up rigs.
Yeah.
And you're not worried about throwing a set of $2,000 tires on it to make it down to San Diego for the weekend. It's already good to go.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
We're fortunate like that. We work hard and we work a lot of hours, but it's a great place to work.
And that's one thing I've noticed. I was talking to Eric and his fiance, Sarah, just how awesome you guys have been and welcoming and the friendliness and just the happiness I've experienced through the warehouse employees or the office employees and everyone just super approachable.
Yeah.
I think that speaks to the culture, you know, the corporate culture, the organization, and the history of the company. You know, people are attracted to it, but also the fact that it's run well. You know, you get a lot of maybe companies that are, the brand is really recognizable, but you kind of look behind the curtain and you're kind of like, oh my God, like, I don't, you know, how is this thing running? How are people kind of keeping this company afloat? But coming here, I was super impressed by just the hospitality and the friendliness and the approachableness. And I think it really trickles down into the quality of the campers and what you see on the road. So
yeah.
Super cool.
We've built a great community over the years by doing that. We're not perfect, and we get super focused or super busy sometimes, and we can't do all of the things that we would like to do for that. But we really like try and put the customer first when we can. And I know myself and some of the other front office people have focused on that. When we do events or customer campouts, we'll try and bring a whole box of parts and spend all day Saturday just working on campers for free, just helping them out and sending them parts and fixing and tweaking and adjusting and just build that community and like have everybody together and be super friendly when we can.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I would put the four-wheel camper community almost in the same like group of love that shared with like as like the VW bus community or like the Volkswagen community. You know, you're driving a VW and like people are giving you the peace sign and there's like a shared understanding of like love towards that culture. And I've experienced the same thing with my four-year-old campers. And just what you said, like tinkering on the weekends, just, you know, out of the generosity and trying to make sure people are having a good time constantly and that their rigs are dialed, and that kind of like reciprocating love is really cool. And even in this room, we're in this little conference kind of center, and I'm looking at the four-wheel campers mission statement. Four-wheel campers is committed to producing low profile, lightweight, durable campers with superior quality and value through continuous improvement, which we're seeing. We just saw that on the floor. Our devotion to building a lifetime of relationships has made us the most respected name in the industry, which I completely agree. So just having that brand awareness is really cool for your employees and customers, you know, or people just coming by to check it out.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. So what's your role here at 4-Wheel Campers? How would you describe it?
I originally started out just sales. Like I came in off the street somewhat and was just sales, trade shows, emails, phone calls, just selling campers. And then over the years, picked up more roles as I went along. Like we have a generic database, just keep track of customers. I would maintain that. And then I started working on our website years ago, just trying to maintain that, not doing any of the coding or anything, but just updating, make sure we have current photos and pictures and prices and info and brochures and all that stuff. So I do, whether you ask my boss or previous bosses, they sometimes don't know what I do. Like I have this like role of a floater, I guess.
Yeah.
So we're on the forums, we're on the Facebook group, we're running the customer rallies, we're doing dealer signups, like new dealers, marketing, this kind of stuff, walk-ins, walk-throughs,
yeah,
trade shows, deliveries, like
every
email that comes in, I'm touching it and I'm sending it out somewhere and answering all the questions. So there's every minute of every day I'm doing something different.
Yeah, you're kind of like the community wrangler and expert point of contact.
Yeah. Some people here like make fun. They're like, yeah, you're the historian. That's your title. You're the historian of 4-Wheel Campers.
Oh, man. I mean, I'd run with that title. That sounds pretty good. And on that note, I do want to brush up on my history of kind of the camper space. And I think the best way to highlight that is talking about your experiences and what kind of got you involved with campers and, you know, your experience leading up to 4-Wheel Campers. So what kind of got you excited about a camper, maybe transitioning from the weekend trips down to Pacifica in the Volkswagen or the Volvo station wagon? How did that transition into like your first kind of camper, and why were you attracted to campers in the first place?
I didn't know when I started here, I really didn't know much about truck campers at all. We had like tent trailers and pickup trucks with like camper shells on them. But I think I had an uncle with maybe what I remember is like an old Alaskan camper. He would stop by and say hello every year. We'd get in it as kids. I was probably 6 years old. So I just remember being inside playing in it. But really didn't have any truck camper experience before I started here. I've seen the cab over campers, but I wouldn't have ever been able to tell you what a pop-up truck camper was.
Yeah.
Not even on my radar.
So you just kind of stumbled upon this whole community.
Yeah, just happened to be local. Factory is like 12 miles from my house. That's the only reason I landed here.
And what was your experiences before working here? What kind of industry were you working in, or what were you doing?
Kind of when I finished up the school that I did do, I didn't know what I wanted to do for a career. Always customer service oriented, sales, always selling something, and a little bit of that comes along with that is the marketing side of that. When I was younger, I bounced down to San Diego for a little less than a year, and kind of just, we went to school down there for one semester and played around for one semester.
What school?
Mesa Junior College. Yeah.
Totally.
Just a bunch of 19-year-old. Just out of high school kids. Just,
what better place to be?
Yeah. So that was awesome.
Yeah.
Came back and got more serious with school. But I waited tables for 4 years through college, and then went into delivering produce. Nothing exciting there for sure. For 3 or 4 years and for a company in Sacramento in my early 20s. And then that company got kind of like gobbled up by one of the big guys, and I moved over to skydiving industry. So I worked at Skydance Skydiving in Davis, and there was Action Air Parachutes and Flight Suit, which is like a jumpsuit manufacturer, which is right there in Davis. It's, you know, 20 minutes out in the fields. So I stayed out there for a few years doing sales and running the gear store and dealer sales and all that stuff. More Monday through Friday or for out there, it was like 7 day a week kind of thing. But more gear sales, stuff like that. Not so much like teaching or tandems or anything like that. Yeah. So did some jumping, but I didn't get addicted like most people do.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I found it intriguing and fascinating, but I didn't have to do it every day like some of those guys.
Yeah, multiple times. I went skydiving 2 years ago, I think, for the first time. Maybe 3 years ago. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy experience. And then we landed. This is down in Watsonville. And we landed. And it took me like 15 minutes to kind of like come down from that adrenaline rush. And within that time, we were already back in like the facility, changing out of our parachutes. And the instructors were packing their chutes to go back up. Yep. I was like,
all day
how
long,
many jumps?
Because they can go.
It was crazy that they were just like, all right, let's go. Let's go get in their fix.
Yeah.
Wild. Highly recommend it, but it is insane to be looking at an airplane and seeing people just free falling below you and then you're next.
Yeah.
But that's cool. I mean, I feel like maybe through the parachute or the skydiving sales, it kind of gave you that experience of like talking to people, explaining products over the phone, building that network out of people.
Yeah. Got a log and shipping and product and pricing and inventory. Yeah. Website stuff. We had that was the early days of the internet.
Yeah.
You know, we had like one of the biggest websites out there for gear.
Wow. Yeah. So that's kind of an intangible skill that can translate almost to any market. Especially, yeah, like the textiles, I'm sure people were curious about when you're selling those products, and that could probably translate into four-wheel campers in terms of like materials used, et cetera. So that'd be a cool segue. So after a skydiving company, you decided to come knocking down here on the door?
Spent a few years in the Bay Area
working
for a recruiting company, like tech, I don't know, teaching, training, recruiting, IT, like the dot-com boom.
Sure. 99,
2000, 2001, and then that whole industry just stopped.
Yeah.
Overnight. The whole barrier just turned off.
So yeah.
Everything stopped. Everybody went away for a year or two, and that's when I came back up here.
I remember when, like 99, 2000, all those companies were coming out, and there was just like company after company. I remember seeing commercials for like eToys and these companies that would deliver anything to your door for any fee. It was just so much investor money just getting thrown into the dot-com thing. And suddenly the brakes went on around 2003.
Yeah, they had unlimited money to try and fund and start up companies that had no value.
Yeah.
You know, hotdogs.com or whatever, like, yeah, we got $50 million in funding. And it's like just the next year and a half is gone.
Yeah, crazy.
So
crazy the amount of money.
Yeah, it came and it went.
Some people made a lot and not a whole lot of people made anything.
Yeah.
So we returned from the Bay Area back to Davis. And at this point, we're starting to get interested in working for, although you didn't really know at the time what it was all about, a company such as Four Wheel Campers.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Six Pack was a part of Four Wheel. Is that how that works? Or
not yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just Four Wheel.
It was about maybe a year and a half to 2 years after I started here. Maybe longer.
Okay.
Somewhere, I want to say, like, memory serves me, like right around 2004.
Six Pack.
It could have been late 03, could have been late 04, but it was somewhere right around 2004.
Okay.
Six Pack Campers had been struggling down. It'd been around. It was biggest truck camper manufacturer in the United States back in the 60s or 70s. So a huge following. I mean, massive company at one time, just dominating the world for small trucks, half-ton trucks, simple, lightweight, affordable, durable. No slides, no 12-foot models or anything. They're all small. Like, put it on a little Datsun pickup truck and go down to Baja. So they had a huge reputation, and the market changes, the truck market changes, people change, ownership or whoever the management team was back then. And the company like slowly kind of like slowed down over that 20 or 30 year period. And kind of just got ran into the ground. It got bought out by, as a guess, like maybe like 2001, it got bought out by one of their premier exporters that was buying campers from Six Pack and exporting them outside of the country. And so their whole business model was shipping campers, Six Pack campers, to other countries. So if Six Pack Camper closed their doors, they're closing their doors because they have no more product. So they bought the company in hopes to keep it going and keep shipping their stuff and try and build it up. And they weren't equipped. Like they didn't have the financing, the backing, or the knowledge to do it. And I think within a couple of years, it just went under.
Yeah.
They started calling around to all the truck campers, manufacturers like us in the industry, like cold calling saying, "Hey, 2 weeks from Friday, we're shutting our doors. Do you want to make us an offer?" And I wasn't involved with these calls. And this is just kind of being here and sitting one office down from the owner at the time. And he took him up on the offer. He flew down there, looked at what was there, and it wasn't really much at all. Some old machinery and a couple campers sitting around. And
where were they down in
Riverside?
Okay.
Yeah. So then they'd been down there for a long time, and I don't know what his final deal was, but made him probably a silly offer on the company. And I think part of their agreement was a lower purchase price with a kickback on future sales. So if they meaning Four Wheel, took Six Pack, grew it, was doing really well, making a lot of money, their people would get a little percentage of that.
Royalty or something.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of a huge upfront, because the Tom and his wife were smart enough to know that, hey, I'm not going to spend $500,000 or $1 million on this company that's just out of business, that's been running to the ground, it has like no momentum, and then lose their coat, shirt tails or whatever. They're like, hey, we'll get in and we'll do it at low cost, and we'll do everything we can do to give it a go. And the company did really well for 4 or 5 years. And then I don't know what people call it nowadays, the Great Recession or Depression, 2008, 2009, 2010, there just wasn't enough volume and business to keep it going. So they shut the factory down late 2009.
Dang. Yeah.
Moved all the inventory, which wasn't much, and all of the machinery up to Woodland.
Wow.
And we just consolidated. They ran the lease out, emptied the building, swept it up, and we started everything back up here. And we just kept focusing on Four Wheel, which was rocking and rolling.
Totally. Yeah. That's wild. So yeah, mine is like a 2007, I think, Six Pack. So one of the last ones to roll off the line.
Great campers.
Yeah. They're awesome. I came across some ads recently of some of their ads they had. And they had a camper with like a F-250 on top of the camper.
Yeah.
To show the strength of them.
Exactly.
So
they had a couple marketing campaigns. The other campaign they had that customers used to talk about, and I remember it as a kid, I couldn't to this day ever find a video clip, but there was a commercial from what people are telling me, and I kind of remember it, of a camper on like the side of a hill, and they roll the truck camper all the way down this hill, like by the beach. It goes down this like sea cliff, lands at the bottom, and it's sitting upright. And they're like, look how durable it is. Like it didn't like crunch or anything. It just like stayed intact.
Crazy.
And it was probably a huge marketing ploy.
Yeah.
But it worked. Like people between that full dually on top of the camper in the parking lot picture you saw and that commercial, like, and the market was perfect time, right place, right time.
Yeah.
The company did really well back then.
Wow. That's probably early 90s, I'd say, judging by the
vehicles. Yeah, or before.
Yeah. Okay.
For sure.
Yeah. What I I know this podcast isn't about six pack, but I love talking about them because they're kind of like the classic California camper in terms of like the simplicity, the build quality, the colors they chose, you know, the browns, like the oranges, the reds, so cool. And the fact that, yeah, you're so close to Mexico and they're durable and they're just kind of a piece of California history, I'd like to think, at least for myself.
Yeah, a lot of people know them. The newer generation, if I talk to our engineers are in their 20s or 30s, they have no idea who Six-Pack is. But the older people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, they all, oh, yeah, we had one. My grandpa had one. My dad had one. Yeah, very well known.
Interesting.
It's just aging out as 10, 20, 30 years goes by.
Yeah. And I even see every now and then on like Craigslist, like they had the line called Backpack, like the truck shells.
Yeah.
Super cool. Same font.
Unfortunately, that's what took the company down.
Really?
They had Six-Pack cab over campers, Backpack by Six-Pack, which is camper shell division. And I think they had the original Flip-Pack campers.
Really?
Was the Six-Pack, Flip-Pack by Six-Pack. Something to that effect. And when they came out with some new version of the Backpack camper shell, Six-Pack camper shell, and it was like molded fiberglass shell or something. Wow. They put a lifetime warranty on it.
Oof.
And they were selling thousands and thousands every year. Just every truck had a little camper shell on it, and they all started cracking.
Really?
Yeah, because it was a new mold, new technique, new material or whatever, and they got into a class action lawsuit, and Six-Pack sold the camper division to that company before us, sold their other one to FRP, I believe, if my memory serves me right. And the Backpack camper shell division, which is really only half an hour away from here in Winters, just went under.
Really? They were still around.
Yeah. It's Access Manufacturing now. It's I think it's part of the old family.
Okay.
It dissolved. They were just re-upped it under new name, new company, new product, aluminum, like started. They've been around for a million years over there. Great company.
Wow.
They built a great product, but it's a industrial camper shell for like contractors.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
Aluminum skin, aluminum frame.
Yeah, totally. Interesting. That's a cool piece of history there.
Yeah. So sometimes in the, like some things are probably unforeseen in certain industries, and that just took a bad turn for them. I think they were probably promised a lot of good stuff from whoever they were buying their product from, and it just took a weird curve.
And they had that brand recognition already and the reputation of strength and long lasting, so it was so easy. You know, I always think if 4-wheel campers made like a camper shell like that, people would be all over it because, oh, they recognize the name, they recognize the quality, like, oh, perfect, why not, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and I think there's companies out there doing that. I don't follow that much, but I think Mule Expedition Outfitters up in Portland, and they also have a place in Issaquah. I think they carry an off-road camper shell, probably mostly for midsize and smaller trucks. Could be full-size trucks from Alucab.
Hmm. Oh yeah,
Alucab, which is like South rooftop, African, like tent and like clamshell, like camper shells,
yeah,
campers. The slide in topper type campers.
Yeah.
A little bit. So there's like people trying to get into that market a little bit. I just think it's different.
Mm-hmm.
Like ARE and Lear and all those guys are just monsters, you know?
Totally. Snug Top.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Lear, one of Lear manufacturing plants is here in Woodland, but they're moving. I don't know what they were doing. They're building like 500 camper shells a day. It's like, what? Like, they're just cranking them out of there.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a big company.
Yeah, big people to go up against.
Yeah, I don't, like, if you drive around Woodland or Sacramento or San Francisco, I don't see camper shells on trucks as much as I did 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Just like regular shells.
Yeah, like a Lear or an ARE. They're very expensive. They're $4,000 or $5,000 now. Like,
yeah.
So I don't see them as a daily purchase, but still some out there, but I think they've gotten so expensive that people are like slowing down on buying those.
Yeah. Yeah. It's more of an accessory to, like, you know, if you have a nice truck and you want the nice shell that matches the truck kind of thing.
They'll put racks on it, a carpet kit,
all
their hunting gear back there.
Totally.
Yeah.
Who knows? That's wild. And going back to like the Six-Pack thing, Backpack, all that stuff, you know, it's, it's so there's so many companies from back then that are no longer around. You know, it's almost like cyclical, the cycle of campers springing up, you know, getting popular, like Wildernest, for example, no longer around. And I just have old books and stuff. I've seen all these old camper companies. I'm trying to think of some more. I mean, there was a ton way back.
Flitpak, yeah, they're gone.
Flitpak. Yeah. Even pop-up campers in that space. I'm trying to think. I usually have them all off the top of my head.
There was a bunch. I mean, Starcraft.
Starcraft.
Apache. Texan.
Yeah, Texan.
Yep. They like, all came and kind of just lasted for, I don't know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years and just cycled out, whether it was market share or marketing or ownership or I don't know.
Yeah. Profitability.
Yeah. It's hard to say.
Yeah. Walking around the floor here, just seeing all the employees, the square footage you guys have, all the inventory of supplies. It's like, dude, it's no easy task to turn a camper into a company, you know, all the quality control measures along the way and then the customer service aspect of it. So a lot of X factors there.
It takes a big team. It takes a lot of hard work. And then you could do everything right and still lose if the economy just tanks. Like,
yeah, it's a luxury.
Even some of it's out of your control. We can only do everything we can do and we can do it all right. But if the economy just stops, like we landed on the right side of the coin with COVID.
Yeah, totally.
Because they wanted our product. But if we were in a different industry, we could have been gone. Like, mm-hmm. So there's so many unforeseen things.
Yeah. You guys are well positioned. I mean, the whole outdoor industry just exploded during COVID, but it could have easily have gone the other way where it was just decimated, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what it was looking like the first couple months going into it. It was like, dude, no, parks are closed. Roads are closed. Dang. Yeah, I can't take everything. My camper out.
We shut our doors and locked the door, turned the lights out and left for 7 weeks.
Really?
Well, we had a couple of people who are receiving out in the shop, but it was weird.
Yeah.
Some weird times.
Super weird. A couple more things I want to touch on that, but in a little bit. I'm just curious, when you landed here in the early 2000s, you know, was the building as big as it is now? Were the four-wheel campers as popular as they are now?
We were four times smaller.
Wow.
25% of our size now, that's about right. We went full circle and we laugh. And my daughter was in here yesterday and she saw our old office down the street, which is strangely enough, like we ended up 200 yards from our original one of our original factories, in the 2000s. So we, at the end of our parking lot here there's a small house and a 25,000 square foot warehouse. We had our showroom outside in the parking lot, four or five campers on little wooden stands underneath a tarp.
Yeah.
We had an office and we had the warehouse and we were building maybe five campers a week.
Wow.
Like four, five was a good week.
Yeah.
And now like our prime, we were building 25 a week. So the numbers are just staggering. Wow. We used to have 20 employees. Now we have it peaked out about 90.
Wow. Yeah. That's
almost 100 maybe.
And back then, back in the 2000s, you guys had, let's see, you had the Granby, you had the Hawk, the Eagle, the Swift?
Nope. Yeah, we had one floor plan, one siding color, one fabric color, one kitchen cabinet. You could get an Eagle. We had like some long bed versions, like Eagle, which is a 6.5 footer, a Ranger, which is an 8 footer for the smaller Toyotas back then.
Yeah.
And then we had the Hawk and the Granby. You could do any of those in a full camper or a shell. And then for a little while, we had a Keystone model.
Yeah, the Keystone. So but cool.
That kind of came and went a couple of different times over the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Nowadays, long bed trucks have kind of
shrunk.
Yeah, they're just disappearing. There's just like every dealer lot all across the country, it's crew cab short bed.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants four doors with a 6, 6.5 or 5 foot bed nowadays.
Yeah, a truck car.
Yeah, so it does both. But that's been good for us because that started, we kind of started seeing that shift around 2002 and it might have started a little bit before that, but maybe the first one, Ford F-150 Super Crew in 99, like there was a half ton four door with a short bed that the family could get in and the dad could still get his truck.
Exactly.
But the wife and the kids were happy to like use it as a car and a truck.
Exactly.
Yeah. Before that, there was extended cabs and maybe some old F-250 crew cabs back in the day, but those are big trucks. Like the women didn't want to drive those.
Yeah. 30 footers.
So 2000 and on, like, because the truck market changed, everybody started buying trucks as family cars.
Yeah.
So we've really benefited from that.
Yeah. You guys are in a prime position.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you get the best of both worlds, I guess. You get the family mobile on the weekends, and then dad gets the truck Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
So
they can still tow their boat, mm-hmm. take their camper, go to the dump, move, whatever, like super universal.
Yeah, that's awesome. When did the company move to Woodland from Colorado? Do you know?
Right in between 1989 and 1990.
Okay.
Somewhere right in there. And the company sold the buyers, memory, it's not serving me. Carol and Jack Billings bought the company. They, I don't know if they lived in Woodland, but this is where their home was. Hmm. They had a house here. Maybe they bought it after that, but they started up a little tiny facility on Main Street here in Woodland, about 90. Got that up, running, staff, showroom, manufacturing, little tiny shop. And once that was up and going, they closed the Colorado factory and moved everything out here.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I had a late 70s Fleet. So cool. It had like the turny knob windows, you know, and it was made in Colorado, and it just had that color scheme that is just like you can't replicate it, you know, like the kind of faded brown. And it had flannel or plaid on the inside and a floral ceiling. It was so cool.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the older ones.
Yeah, total time capsule.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, you know, I think I sold it for probably what the person bought it for back in, you know, the 70s, you know. Nice. They hold their value so well. And I think that's something that keeps people coming back is, you know, maybe they look at it more as like obviously a recreational vehicle, but also like somewhere to kind of park their money where the value will hold because of craftsmanship and the quality and the product name behind it.
Definitely. Some people find them a little expensive to buy up front, but
yeah,
if they like to hang, if they're going to sell it the next year, then that's here nor there. It's harder. Like if you buy a brand new camper, drive off the lot and try and sell it in a year from now, you'll take a little bit of a hit.
Yeah.
But if you keep it for 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20, exactly like what you were saying, they're getting what they paid for it. Mm-hmm. Like it's amazing the resale value.
Yeah, it is. And I'm kind of curious, you know, does it make you sad to see a lot of newer campers, newer four-wheel campers right now hitting the market, kind of like the COVID purchases? I've been looking on Craigslist and Facebook a lot, and I see a lot of, you know, 2022, 2023 four-wheel campers used a handful of times.
No, and we saw that coming.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, because I think COVID brought out a lot of people that wanted, they were in lockdown. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of them, people were working from home and could work remotely, and then they started seeing the burst of people doing that on social media, and so they wanted to get in on that. And whether it's a travel trailer, a van, a truck camper, a tent trailer, whatever, everybody was so tired of being locked up, they just went out and bought everything that they could find anywhere just to get out of the house and stay away from people. Mm-hmm. So our normal customer that would fit the product better, like there was just a lot of impulse buyers.
Totally.
Yeah. That liked the product, but it wasn't really good fit for them. And then they got called back to work and they back in the office and like, oh, well, it's just sitting now because we can't go goof around every weekend.
Yeah.
So it was just a little like a bubble like
totally.
that burst, like a little blip on the 30-year chart.
Yeah.
It went up and now it's just coming right back to where it used to be about 17, 18, 19, we're at the same level.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It kind of makes me a little sad to see them, you know, like barely used, but, I guess that's a good point. A lot of people, maybe they purchased it knowing like, hey, this is a temporary escape pod and it's not forever. Or, you know, I also think there's the crowd that sees the social media, they get all fired up and they buy it and they take their wife out and they're like, actually, you know, my wife would prefer like a hotel room or something with a shower. And
that definitely happens. Yeah. Yeah. Camping is like in the industry when we see people do world trips or US trips and they run into, they think they're going to like travel in their van or a camper or whatever. And then they go, they hit the road full time. It's not always like glamorous. Like it's not always easy.
Yeah.
You're going to have hot weather. You're going to have cold weather. You're going to have truck breaking down. You're going to have this problem. Like it's not all glorious. Like all the, like the social media makes like, oh, I want to do that. That's awesome. They don't work. They just travel and post cool pictures. And then you get out there and it's like, this is a challenge.
Yeah.
Like there's some work to this.
Totally. Yeah. It's a trade off.
Yeah,
you're sleeping in Walmart parking lots, or you're dealing with breakdowns or shady restroom areas, and it's definitely a grind, and but you know what we're seeing is that four wheel campers throughout all of that has like maintained like a level head, good quality craftsmanship. I keep saying that, but it's true, and I think after that kind of bubble or that blip on the radar, the core base is still around and they're still more fired up than ever, especially with all the new additions you guys have just made this past, past couple months.
Yeah. Finally making some really nice changes to move the product forward.
Yeah.
But overall the product, I get a chance cause we were in the industry and we kind of like rub shoulders with other people in the industry doing similar type products, and whether it's a Earth Roamer, you know, $350,000 sports mobile and this and that and a $250,000 diesel pusher or a pop-up camper like for $20,000. People have sometimes super high expectations, and there's like our campers are built to last. We build around durability, utility, but there's always little stuff you got to work on. Like they have a 10-year-old camper and they have to replace a gas strut on the outside and they're pissed. And I'm like, you had to do tires on your truck. You had to do brakes. You had to do shocks. You had to do alternator. You had to do battery. You had to do all that stuff. And you didn't complain about like, I'm like, so, but our core customer, they love them.
Yeah.
Cause if you just use it and you take care of it, yeah, you're going to have to adjust this, do this, replace the battery every 4 or 5 years, like change a fan out every 10 years or, you know, grease this or change a fuse or whatever. But they just go, like yours, your old fleet, they just go and go and go.
Totally. That thing was bulletproof. It had a few issues, but nothing you couldn't fix.
Yeah.
Lifting panel was rotted. Exactly. Couple holes in the canvas.
And that's the some of the stuff, like, thankfully we've addressed over the years going to the composite lift panels now. So those old thin, like
plywood.
Plywood, yeah, a quarter inch plywood panels. You don't have springs to worry about that anymore.
Yeah. The piano spring. That's awesome. That's really good to hear. Do you, so since COVID or during COVID, it just seems like recently we've had a resurgence, like a renaissance of campers. There's so many manufacturers now. You know, the big boys still remain like Lance, Arctic Fox, Elkhorn, Host, the guys that have been around for a while, they're still here, but now we have so many little, almost like backyard builders that now have turned it into a small business. Specifically like the wedge camper renaissance or phenomenon, where, you know, people like Go Fast Campers, Topo Toppers, Tune Outdoors. I mean, there's dozens. There's
5, 6, 7, 10, 12, 15.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. I'm curious if you see those like guys as like a opportunity that now people are into the camping space, or do you see them more as like a threat that maybe they've taken some of the pie away? How do you view the wedge camper kind of renaissance?
Well, we've been fortunate because of our history and our following and our size and financial stability and backing, and we have so much momentum and so much history out there. Like we're leading it. Mm-hmm. If there's benefits to having that kind of competition out there, and there is for us over the years, it's happened a couple times where we might have in the early days, like what we perceived as competition, like nipping at our heels, and nowadays with all these new companies coming up, it pushes our leadership and our ownership and management to make changes that are good here. So like when we're like fat and happy and we're on top of the world and orders are coming in faster than we can build and we have no competition, we keep doing the same thing every day. We just keep building the same thing because we're not getting pushed out of our comfort zone.
Totally.
And we're not stepping forward to make the product like even better and better and better. So if there was a benefit, and I think there is with all these new companies coming out, two things, COVID and the younger generation, we have a whole new generation of people that want to be outdoors. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's coming from social media or the lockdown or whatever it is. So now we have thousands and thousands and thousands of new, younger people that want to get outdoors and explore.
Totally.
In whatever they can afford, whether it's a van or a camper or a truck or their Prius or whatever. And they're just getting out there and doing it. And that is awesome.
Yeah.
So that helps the whole industry rise. Like there's so much business out there that I think it's good for all of us. Like we can all rise with that tide. Like we don't have to be the big dog that squashes everybody. Like I prefer to help them all.
Yeah.
We are a company and we like pride and competitiveness. We want to do well and we obviously want to sell more, but the good thing is the last few years, there's been plenty of business. So there's room for everybody, each style of camper and toppers and wedges. And there's just, they're all different.
Yeah.
Like every customer, we can try and tell people about our product and what we do and how we do it and why we do it. But in the end, they got to pick what they like. Mm-hmm. And that's good for them. Like
yeah.
There was only one brand out there, it's not good for the customer base because they have to pick that brand. I think it's really nice as somebody buying something to have choices.
Yeah, 100%. It's good for
quality, size, shape, materials, location, and price. Like, go find what suits your needs. Like, we build what we build and we do really well, but we also know that we're not for everybody. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. I think, you know, get, like you said, just get more people out there exposed to what they can be doing on the weekends, whether it's in a Prius or it's in a Earth Roamer, just getting people out there, getting people camping, and eventually they'll funnel into what category suits them best. You know, is it the weekend warrior? Is it the full timer? Is it the van thing? Is it the truck camper thing? So that's a great outlook because I think a lot of people would be, maybe not alarmed by the amount of competition, but they might shy away from it and, you know, oh, geez, look what's going on over here, yeah. You know.
It'll be interesting to see the next couple of years who lasts out exactly. of that. There was such a boom and such a wave of unlimited buyers lined up with cash ready to buy anything that in the last 3 or 4 years, there's been a ton of startups like mm-hmm. and like garage out of their, they get a little shop. It's like two guys building campers. They're making like 12 a year, 50 a year, whatever it is. Some of those people aren't going to last and some will.
Like, yeah.
We just don't know.
We don't know
who it's going to be.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be exciting to watch.
Yeah.
On that note, what companies do you think are doing it right or kind of inspiring four-wheel campers or inspiring you? Like what companies do you see, you know, hop on Instagram or social media and you see these products that they're making and you're like, all right, that's cool. Do you have a,
I can't. Yeah, I'm too biased. Yeah. I'm like too biased to answer that question.
That's fine.
I see stuff that I like.
Yeah.
Lance campers for like the old school big cab over campers are awesome.
Yeah.
Too big, too heavy, like for my liking. I would buy something smaller, like an old version of a D. You have a D650, like the D850, a long bed, hard-sided cab over camper, like the six pack used to make a 8 foot version of yours or 8.5 foot.
Wow.
For a big 3/4 ton or 1 ton long bed that had no overhang, not very wide, not very long, no taillights. You just slid simple. In, tightened it. Yeah. Simple and had everything you need. If I don't want to do a 12 foot with triple slides at 4,500 pounds.
Yeah.
That's just not for me.
Yeah.
I'd rather tow a trailer probably at that point.
Totally.
So simple is like better for me. I want the basics. Sink, stove, fridge, furnace, battery, solar, you know, all that stuff. But I don't want to bring my house with me. I'm not retired. I'm not traveling full time. Like we're just weekend warriors. Mm-hmm. So I just want to get off the ground, out of the weather, have a comfortable bed and some heat.
Yeah.
And we're happy as a clam. Bring a cooler and go sit by the campfire. Then we're stoked.
Like, nice. That's great. Yeah, it's cool that you can look forwards for inspiration, but also look backwards at those kind of minimalist builds, which obviously is right in line with four-wheel campers, is kind of, you know, everything you need, but not nothing you don't. Unless you want, we can add on to that, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a couple up-and-comers, but like if there was a company building a pop-up truck camper that was cool and innovative and doing good stuff and seems to be really good construction is the Overland Campers out of Canada, Overland X or whatever those are.
Okay.
Like they've made a good name for themselves.
Yeah.
They're just getting started in the industry in the past few years. They have a few dealers here in the States. Looks like a really good product.
Yeah. Not to be confused with like OVR, LND, those like Overland Campers. Yeah. They make like a flatbed model. They make a essentially kind of like a four-wheel style model.
Yeah. Pop-up truck camper.
Pop-up camper.
And then the over shortened OVR is that like our Project M topper.
Yeah.
Those guys are out of Flagstaff.
Yeah.
It looks like a twin to ours. I mean, different. Unfinished on the inside, different shape, but the similar idea to our Project M topper.
Yeah.
But different.
Different.
I think they do barn doors and.
Yeah, it sits more flush with the bed rails. It doesn't expand.
Narrower. You can build it. I think they'll do it unfinished. So you can do a full build and.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different style, but very, very well known out there.
Yeah. Super clean looking campers. And it's funny you mentioned Lance. Lance has kind of been. Man, I've heard so many stories about Lance in terms of like their quality's gone downhill, like blah, blah, blah. But it's interesting to hear that, you know, you someone with a lot of experience in the industry still regards them as a top tier manufacturer.
Yeah, I don't know so much. I don't know anything about their new campers.
Yeah.
I only like back in 2002, they were a monster.
Totally.
They were the biggest truck camper guys and we were nobody on their radar. We were a little speck. Like we're building 20 campers a month, you know, 15 or 20 campers a month. And they're probably were building like, I don't know the numbers I heard. We actually had an employee that used to work there and they were building like 100 a month, 100 full size, hard sided cab overs a month out of their factory down like Pasadena or somewhere on the desert.
Lancaster.
Yeah. Palmdale, Lancaster. Yeah.
Just churning out.
They were just a monster company. And over a very short amount of time, that maybe is like 10 year period, these are just numbers I've heard. I don't have exact numbers to be able to like give you statistics, but they went from like 100% truck campers. They started building Lance travel trailers.
That's right.
And within a few years, the travel trailer division was half of their revenue, half of their sales. So I don't know if that was 100% new growth on the travel trailer side and the truck campers stayed where they were. But I think that, we saw it with six pack, the truck camp, hard-sided cab over camper market shrunk, started like slowly, was probably big in the 90s and early 2000s. And it has kind of totally shrunk since then. So they pivoted and said, hey, our truck campers are slowing down just because the whole industry, the big long bed dually trucks are not on the road as much. Mm-hmm. And so where else can we bring in a new product line? And they nailed it.
Yeah.
It was perfect for their business core. And they've grown even bigger. I don't know, 2, 3, 4 times since then.
Yeah.
So they did the exact right thing. They still do to their truck campers. I can only attest to their old, like 20 years ago, their quality was really good.
Yeah.
I have no idea. We don't run in that crowd anymore.
Yeah.
We did back then because we did six pack, which is we were the mini competitor to them. Like we were putting pressure on them. So we were taking away short bed sales and
they had half Lance,
ton sales.
They had like a Lance mini, I think it would compete with a six pack mini.
Yeah. So they knew about us very well back then, but we never really were a threat for them.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I just found out yesterday they announced plans for a Tacoma-style camper.
Yeah.
And a half-ton style camper as well, the 805.
Yeah. I heard, I think Gordon from Truck Camper Magazine did it.
Yeah.
Was trying to tout the 805, and I think that's a smart move.
Me too.
Come back with a simple, straightforward 8-foot model, No slides, no hangover, no tail. Just you have everything you need. And it's super big floor plan. And that goes back to the 850 or 800 or the D850 was exact same camper. Mm-hmm. Exact same camper. Just so perfect for a big truck camper, but not too big.
Exactly.
A couple thousand pounds and go rock it.
Totally. Simple. And I think that's what it's cool. It's cool to see the big companies like Lance and those guys recognize that the industry is changing once again, that this newer generation is coming up, and this newer generation either, you know, they got a Tacoma passed down from their dad, or, you know, it was more affordable than like the Dodge Ram 2500 diesel to get a Tacoma or something smaller. And where the wedge camper kind of market took off, I think now there might be a gap there where the people have the truck, they're used to camping. Now they have a family or maybe a significant other, and they're wanting more of a shelter than just like the wedge camper. This is me theorizing, but I think Lance and those bigger companies are paying attention to what's happening by reintroducing these models. I know Palomino introduced a small, I don't want to say quarter ton import, you know, Tacoma style pop up recently. And there was another one as well. I forget who, but it does seem like they're kind of full circling it back now to where you guys have been the whole time. So it'll be interesting to see what the next few years bring.
Yeah. And I don't have a crystal ball and I don't know it all, but I only have a gut feeling, and that could be dead on or that could be 100% wrong. But trying to build a hard sided cab over camper of any size or any shape or any weight for a Tacoma, 100% my personal opinion, not a good idea.
Yeah.
I think they'll all flop, and they all have so far.
Yeah.
They're two people on the internet and the forums and the user groups are, there's Tacoma police. There's what we call weight police nowadays. You're going to die if you put a camper on there. Your insurance won't cover you. They're going to sue you. You're going to lose your house if you're 2 pounds overweight. And there's not, I don't really like, I can't buy into that because I think it's a little too extreme, but
there's some truth.
The other side of that is there's definitely some truth to that of like, be cautious. Like, it's a small truck. Don't kill it. Don't overload it. Don't try and put 2,000 pounds on a Tacoma. That's not such a good idea. Like, keep it simple. Keep it lightweight. Like, don't kill it, because there is a very limited payload on those trucks. Mm-hmm. Like, the smaller and the lighter it is, the better it is. The better it drives, the better it stops. That's super important. So I don't ignore any of that stuff. But some people are just so... We've done truck campers here at Four Wheel Camper since the 70s on a Datsun pickup truck, or the original Toyota pickup truck with a four-cylinder carburetor. And they would put 200,000 or 300,000 miles on it, like over a 20-year period, and the truck still runs. Like, there's no problems, but don't kill it. Like, you got to watch your numbers, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm not saying overload your truck by any means, because that's not a good idea for any truck. But I've had 3 F-150s, 3 Tundras, all of our shop trucks. Like, I would prefer a bigger, if I'm doing a truck camper, I would have 3/4 ton or 1 ton's best truck. Better, everything's better. Axles, brakes, frame, everything's better. Like, but I don't want to drive a 1 ton truck to work and back every day. Like, my Tundra's so easy to drive and so reliable. And I got overload and E-rated tires, and like, we'll put a little pop-up camper on there and just, we can go anywhere across country. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd slow and steady. I'm not trying to do 90 miles an hour like race car anymore, but
yeah,
I personally feel very comfortable. And then there's other years where I put big campers on trucks. My six pack, I had it on a half ton, did great, but the brakes were weak. Like, it was like, oh, these drum brakes in the back, small disc brakes. I'm like, oh yeah, this camper is probably too heavy for the truck. And you know, like, you know, you feel it. You're like, probably not a good idea. Mm-hmm. That's why we sold it.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, you need a bigger truck for that.
Totally.
So it's just gut feeling, like trusting your gut feeling on how the truck drives and what you're comfortable with. And then look at the camper weight, look at food, gear, water, and payload. And, you know, if you're a couple pounds over, that's up to you. But that doesn't freak me out, but being a lot over is definitely something to consider.
Yeah. And you see the horror photos. They're comical on the internet.
Yeah.
Of like an F-150 with like an Arctic fox on the back. Just totally no springs or nothing. Yeah. And oh my gosh, I can't even, you know, I've overloaded a few vehicles and the experience is just so unenjoyable driving it. It's like, you know, within a trip or two, you're like, all right, I'm selling the truck. Like it's not right. And I can't enjoy myself going down the one with my whole thing swaying and stuff knocking over.
Yep.
But there are, yeah, I do hear you, and I'm active on the forums as well. And I see a lot of the banter with overload and, you know, you're going to destroy your truck and it's can't take that. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see if the manufacturers of vehicles are taking note as well. I was talking just to Eric on the floor right now, mentioning how it's projected, I think, that the Tacoma and the Ranger will have like increased payload capacities, which is great for you guys and great for the consumer as well. So
yeah, it's not going to be substantial. It'll be a few hundred pounds more, but anything helps.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they put those payload packages at the perfect truck. And then if you get a different truck bed length or a crew four-wheel cab drive instead of an extended cab or four-wheel drive, then that payload goes from 19 to 18 to 17. And then they look at the door sticker and they're like, well, I have a crew cab four-wheel drive Tacoma with a 5-foot bed, and it says my payload is 1,089 pounds. Like, yeah. That's not very much. Like, well, you got a 5-foot bed on there. Like, you can't really fit much more than in there.
Totally.
And then they don't even, a lot of customers don't realize, even if they say their payload's 1,575 pounds for their Tacoma, if you put in 1,600 pounds in that Tacoma, you're going to kill it. Like, it'll do a wheelie. They don't understand they need a whole new leaf pack, maybe some power stop brakes in the front, E-rated tires, and like you can't max it out without doing more suspension upgrade anyway. Like even customers that buy our toppers are like, yeah, I'm going to throw some bags on it just to level it out. 400 pounds is like the truck has made for reliability and to drive smooth. So when you load it up, like they sag, like they are going to squat a little bit. If you go back 30 years and buy an old, I don't know, Chevy truck or whatever, big Ford pickup truck, like people used to joke about, oh yeah, I need a kidney belt to drive it because it just bounces down the road because it was so sprung, so tight that is like, but you could throw anything in it and it would carry it. Nowadays, everybody wants the smooth ride. They want the truck to drive like a car, but they want the heavy payload, which it's hard to manage that
absolutely
without stiffening it up.
Yeah, no, it's good insight for there for sure. You mentioned how all these other camper companies are creating, you know, I don't say pressure, but they're allowing four-wheel campers to innovate and not just sit back and kind of collect orders or whatever. And we saw recently innovation in terms of the electrical system getting upgraded, the powered actuators to lift and lower the roof, the AC option now, and I think the water and furnace upgrades, water system in terms of water heater and furnace. Were those some upgrades that you thought maybe were a long time coming, or how do you feel about where those innovations and where the company's going?
No, all good stuff. All of that. We've had running lists of stuff we wanted to do for years and stuff that we hear, see, and experience of things to improve on. Lithium, for many years, the price point was just, you know, a little higher than price versus value. So it was cheaper and beneficial, like, for most customers at a price point, just to go with like two big 6-volt battery AGMs or two 12-volt AGMs and just, you know, $400 or $500 and you're good for four or five years. But lithium has come down and technology has come up. So I think going over to lithium standard on every camper, that it's twice the amount of actual usable power in that battery compared to just a boat RV battery. Like, and it, you have full power the entire time, like out to like 80% life of the battery, and then it'll drop off or turn off. But you have full power the entire cycle of the battery. The warranties, like five times longer, charges faster. It just, everything's about it is amazing. Like, so I think we management and Dan, our president, made that decision is like, hey, if we upgrade to lithium, it's a benefit to every customer. We'll get less service calls with less dead batteries. The batteries will last two to five times longer. Like Dakota Lithium is who we're using. They have an 11-year warranty on the battery. Like a deep cycle AGM battery from Costco or whatever might have a 2-year warranty. So, but they usually last 4 or 5 years or more. So we're going to get 2 or 3 times the amount. So if you look at like how much buying batteries twice or 3 times over 11-year period, it's the same price.
Yeah.
And you're going to have
less maintenance.
Yeah. Less maintenance, much more enjoyable. So everything I think is good. Air conditioner people have been asking for a long time.
Yeah.
You guys that's like mostly like hot, humid states, Florida, Texas, East Coast in the summer. 10 Western states. It's not very humid, hot, super hot out here, but we don't have that humidity. So it's a little easier. We still do the rear wall air conditioner on some units, which is cheaper. Roof lifts. What I've seen so far is a majority of our orders and phone calls and inquiries about assists, roof lift assist stuff that we've come out with. The internal electric lift is dominating like 10 to 1 over the outside lifts. Just probably for simplicity, it could be retrofitted to any camper, new or old, and it's like $895. The outside version is like $5,000.
Yeah.
So I don't see a lot of people, well, just the numbers speak for itself. So I think it's nice to have the option and they can pick whatever one they like. And a lot of people don't need either of them. We have the gas strut lift assists outside that come standard. And like most people can just push the roof right up. And if they're older or back neck problems, shoulder problems, or they have a lot of gear on the roof, they can just order the interior one, snap it in, plug it in the cigarette lighter and works like a champ.
Nice. Yeah.
All good stuff. And
really
then
good.
For heater and hot water heater, we've used different brands over the years, but the Truma is the, everybody's been talking about Truma furnaces for years and years. It's just higher end, better company, better product, better parts inside of it, just more reliable. So we've always wanted to upgrade to a little bit better system for both the hot water heater and the heater. And the Truma factory reps came out, their techs came out, worked on our production line, helped us like design the cabinets around it and give us all the install techniques and tips and tricks, and we went for it, and it's been really good so far.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to see the innovation, you know, innovating an already great product, just taking these little ideas and kind of putting them into play. And almost time to go here, but before we do, curious if you can share, if you want to share, any thoughts about the future of four-wheel campers in terms of innovation or where the company's going. If you have any insight to that, or if you have any thoughts on just, you know, what innovations you see in the future, what kind of market you see emerging in the future, how you see four-wheel campers fitting into the future space.
We have a lot of behind-the-scene discussions about that kind of stuff. I'm only one of many people here. Like, I don't know, there might be 12 people in our front office. I have a lot of input from the history's perspective, and I know what customers are thinking and what they're doing and what they're looking for, because we're out in the field with our customers, with people at shows and on the forums like 24 hours a day. So I have a really good pulse of what the market is looking for and asking for, and strengths and weaknesses. I don't know where the product will go. Like, we have a lot of cool ideas that we're thinking about, but we're not sure. Like, we did so much in the last 6 months. It was like, okay, let's do that. Let's get our house in order, get everything figured out, our order form, deliveries, and just trying to keep things rocking and rolling this year, since like really starting early last year, the market in the whole industry has slowed down. Things are stabilizing, coming back to normal. The COVID boom is over. Supply chain issues are over. People are back to work. So we're kind of just like making the product better and making all the components better and the electrical systems better, more reliable, and looking towards the future. But I don't think anybody has a magic crystal ball of like where the product is. It going to stay the same, or is it going to change, or we're going to come out with something different? I'm not sure. Well, time will tell, I think.
Yeah, 100%. You guys get to bring back the hard-sided four-wheel camper, the rare hard-sided.
I almost said that, but I didn't. But no, we haven't talked about it at all.
Yeah, that's good, I think.
And we tried to resurrect six-pack here after we shut down six-pack in Riverside, moved it up here. We wanted to build six-pack campers here in like 2011, 12, 13, get it going again. But we wanted to do it aluminum frame instead of wood frame, because that's what we do here is aluminum. And then the transition point was the hard-sided. We were doing for a hard-sided four-wheel camper. That was our quick, immediate way to start building hard-sided cab-over campers, aluminum frame, and without tooling up a whole new factory. And the demand just wasn't there. And our price point was super cheap compared to four-wheel, we were only charging $2,000 more for the camper for hard-sided. So if at that time, like a Hawk was $20,000, whatever, very well-equipped Hawk, $20,000, Hawk hard top was $22,000.
Wow.
We were losing money. We probably weren't losing, but
yeah,
it took us twice as long, twice as many man hours to build that same camper for only $2,000 more. And then discounts and all that stuff would make it even worse. But a couple of times we thought about bringing those back, but it goes full circle to what I said about Lance or any of these Palominos or Living Light. I don't know if Living Light did the small, like the Tacoma size campers, but it's a tough sell. It's a tough sell for the little trucks, because there are a lot of these. I don't even know if what the Tacoma is coming out with in 24, because we can't see one. Every dealer doesn't have anything. We've been dying to see one, measure it, check it out. I don't know if they're doing V6 or if they're only doing like a twin turbo four cylinder. Don't know, but I think if you do a four cylinder twin turbo and put a cab over camper, that little motor is going to be working. It'll do it. It'll probably scream down the road, but I think you're going to wear stuff out quicker.
Yeah, definitely a little hamster wheel just spinning super fast under the hood.
Yeah, I think the old Tacoma's V6 would be like the winner.
Yeah.
No turbos.
Or the first gen Tundra.
I'm old school. I don't want turbos.
Yeah. Unless it's on a diesel.
Yeah.
Awesome, Stan. Well, thanks so much for sharing your insight to the company history of campers, you know, your personal experiences. I learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners are going to learn a lot. And yeah, I just want to thank you for taking the time again, and also just for being available on the forums through email and stuff. I know we've interacted a little bit on the forums. What are some forums you're active in if someone wants to get a hold of you, if they have a specific question?
You can email me through our website or if you're a Facebook guy, I'm on the Four Wheel Campers Owners Group, which is a public/private group on Facebook. I'll look at websites like Wander the West and Expedition Portal. There's not as much chatter on that. There's a used four-wheel camper page on Facebook that we run. Just customers can post stuff. That's the three. And then email is always the best way, because when we're getting messages from Messenger and Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and 5-6 all these forums, like I can't keep track of them. I can't answer them. And sometimes their messaging system, I can't attach pictures to. So I'll always like get back to a customer better with better links, more information and better pictures if they need something by email. Cause I track everything through that.
Yeah.
And then I think if there was a recap or an overview of our conversation today, for any customer listening or young or old or whatever, they're getting new to truck campers or experienced, just get out there and do it. Don't save. You don't have to have the $125,000 flatbed rig and a new truck and payments and insurance. Man, just go buy a truck that's reliable and throw an old camper on there. Man, get on Craigslist and find an old cab over camper that needs a little work, $2,500, and get out there. Like, if you're working to killing yourself, working 50, 60 hours a week to go pay for all these toys, but not going anywhere. Oh, it gets old because I work a lot. Like, and I'm like, I should be slowing down and going out and doing stuff. I'm wired that way. I want to work. I get grumpy when I'm not working, but I also think people need to find a balance. Like, find something that works for you and buy it and go have fun. Make it yours. Whether that's a camper shell or a Prius or a truck camper or a tent trailer or a little van, or, and then work your way up. Figure out what works for you, what you like, what fits your budget, and just go have fun. Get out of the house, go sit by the campfire.
Love it. It's perfect. You captured it perfectly. That's what it's all about. Just get out there, just do it. Work with what you got. If the grass is greener, water your own lawn. And you'll get, if you want to get to the brand new truck camper with the brand new F-350 Tremor, you'll get there eventually, but awesome. you don't need to start there.
Exactly.
Just get out there and see if you like it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Stan. I had a pleasure chatting to you, and looking forward to staying in touch.
Thank you.
All right, guys. I hope you really enjoyed that episode with Stan Kennedy at Four Wheel Campers. Such an awesome conversation we got to have. I hope, if you had any questions, I hope they got answered in that podcast. I had some questions going into it, and Stan definitely answered those questions. It was cool to discover kind of the history of Six Pack and a couple other things. Fun time. So hope you enjoyed that episode. I had a great time recording it. Can't wait to do the next one. And before I leave, hey, we have the Facebook group and it's popping off. I really encourage you guys to go join it. It's a great place to share tips and tricks and also show off your rig. It's really fun. I've been seeing a lot of really cool rigs, a lot of DIY knot, and I really encourage you guys to go join that. Do yourself a favor. Facebook group at Small Truck Campers. Also, if you haven't already, check out Guayaki Yerba Mate and The Grail. I'll link to those guys below. I want to thank again their support for this podcast and this whole community that we got going on. All right, well, till our next time, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. Keep dreaming and scheming, and we'll be talking soon. Take care.